Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin, and on today's podcast, we're going to learn about a recent article that appeared in the journal Science that perpetuates the implausible Miller-Urey experiment. A Science Now news release from Thursday, October 16th, states that reanalyses of the products of Stanley Miller and Harold Urey's famous Origin of Life experiments from the 1950s have shown that more amino acids were present than were previously thought. Origin of Life theorist Robert Hazen is quoted in the article saying that the study, quote, highlights how easy it is to make the building blocks of life in plausible prebiotic conditions, unquote. But did the Miller-Urey experiments use plausible prebiotic conditions? The news release on Science's website acknowledges that a methane and ammonia were the, quote, gases presumed at the time to be the main constituents of the atmosphere billions of years ago, unquote. Even Stanley Miller himself admitted that he assumed that these were the gases in the atmosphere because they produced the desired result for Origin of Life research, not because of the actual physical evidence. As Miller wrote in the Journal of Molecular Evolution, quote, it is assumed that amino acids more complex than glycine were required for the origin of life, then these results indicate a need for CH4 methane in the atmosphere, unquote. Or, as he wrote in the book Origins of Life on Earth, quote, we believe that there must have been a period when the Earth's atmosphere was reducing, because the synthesis of compounds of biological interest takes place only under reducing conditions, unquote. Regardless of how many chemical products useful to the origin of life may have come out of Miller's experiments, many sources have shown that the Earth's early atmosphere was mainly composed largely of carbon dioxide and nitrogen, not methane or ammonia as Miller's experiments required. The geochemical evidence is very clear on this point. The news release even admits that, quote, the problem was that theoretical models and analyses of ancient rocks eventually convinced scientists that Earth's earliest atmosphere was not rich in hydrogen, unquote. And the actual paper published in Science says, quote, geoscientists today doubt that the primitive atmosphere had the highly reducing composition, unquote. Thinking along these lines, leading Origin of Life theorist David Deamer observed in the journal Microbiology and Molecular Biology Reviews that, quote, carbon dioxide does not support the rich array of synthetic pathways leading to the possible monomers. So the question arose again, what was the primary source of organic carbon compounds, unquote. The original excitement produced by the Miller-Urey experiment stemmed from the fact that it might indicate a vast primordial soup filled with interacting organic molecules and sufficient to overcome any great odds associated with the origin of life. After all, just last month, David Deamer himself said when asked about the origin of the gene that, quote, genetic information more or less came out of nowhere by chance assemblages of short polymers, unquote. So chance still plays a significant role in origin of life thinking, and one must somehow accumulate sufficient probabilistic resources to satisfy the mandates of chance. Since the Earth's early atmosphere is clearly not conducive to Miller-Urey experiment-type chemistry, the vast primordial soup hypothesis was abandoned. Yet Science's new news release suggests that instead, quote, it is possible that volcanoes, which were much more active early in Earth's history, seeded our planet with life's ingredients, unquote. Similarly, the paper published in Science about the reanalyses of the Miller-Urey experiment state, quote, the volcanic apparatus experiment suggests that even if the overall atmosphere was not reducing, localized prebiotic synthesis could have been effective, unquote. But how will you get such localized, highly reducing conditions in a few places on Earth with a non-reducing atmosphere everywhere? In a paragraph in the Science paper describing such speculation, there is one may and four coulds. Even if the mays and the coulds imply a did, such a speculative scenario greatly reduces the amount of primordial soup to little localized pockets near the island arc volcanoes, vastly reducing the ability to meet the odds required by chance. I doubt that producing little localized collections of prebiotic soup around island arc volcanoes can produce anything remotely close to the amount of primordial soup needed to overcome the odds facing the chemical production of life. Having sufficient primordial soup to overcome the odds facing the chemical origin of life is especially important in light of the fact that origin of life scenarios still rely on chance. But the big question is, quote, what happened next, unquote. Even if these experiments did use plausible prebiotic conditions, they're still millions of miles away from making life. Stanley Miller himself conceded in an undergraduate seminar I took from him at UC San Diego that, quote, making compounds and making life are two different things, unquote. He's made similar statements to that effect publicly, as an article in Discover magazine stated, quote, even Miller throws up his hands at certain aspects of it. The first step, making monomers, that's easy. We understand it pretty well. But when you have to make the first self-replicating polymers, that's very easy, he says, the sarcasm fairly dripping. Just like it's easy to make money in the stock market. All you have to do is buy low and sell high. He laughs. Nobody knows how it's done. Unquote. Likewise, the news release on Science's website states, quote, the big question is what happened next. How do those molecules turn into self-replicating organic compounds? That's the frontier, Jim Cleaves says, and we're sort of stuck there, unquote. Perhaps all this explains why Origin of Life theorists are so excited about these new reports of more amino acids from Miller's outdated and highly implausible experiment. They're a bit overeager for some good news. This is Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.